storms between 9 p.m. and 11. Some of the storms could produce gusty winds, partly cloudy with a low around 76. West wind 3 to 6 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 20%. Saturday, mostly sunny and hot. Wait a minute, we just jumped from today to Saturday. Okay, I'll give you Saturday. Mostly sunny and hot with a high near 97. Heat index values as high as 110. West wind 5 to 7 miles per hour. Larry, I think we'll go right to our show.
Yeah, we can go on once you put the mics on, right?
Take it away, Larry.
Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and my co-host who put the mics on is Tracy Ivey. And this is part of NAMI's hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. There's a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we are all volunteers, work out of our houses, that sort of thing, use our own phones. But what we try to do is we try to help families who either have someone in their family who has a mental health issue or the person themselves who come to NAMI to get help. We try to funnel them in the right direction to get the help they need. Everything we do is free. We have what they call a family-to-family class, which is a 12-week course coming up in September for families or people who either have husbands, wives, sisters, brothers, aunts, uncles, whatever, who have a mental health issue. And it tries to get the person taking the class to realize what it's like to be the person with the illness. They go over medications, side effects, what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say in certain circumstances. And again, you don't have to be a member of NAMI to take the class, and it is totally free. All the material and notebooks and everything is all free. We also have a monthly support group, which is held in Flemington at 52 East Main Street from 7 to 8:30, sometimes 9 o'clock, depending how long people want to talk. And again, you don't have to be a member of NAMI. You can just show up. You don't have to register, but you do have to register for the class. So if you would like to register for the class, all you'd have to do is call 908-284-0500. That's 284-0500. We don't answer the phone 24/7, but we do have a lady who checks it at least twice a day, and we will get back to you just as soon as possible. We are, pardon me, we are very privileged today to have with us Laura Brooks, who is a licensed clinical social worker, and she has her master's and works at Life Touch in Princeton, New Jersey. Laura, thank you for being here today and taking the time out of your busy schedule. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right, let's start by explaining exactly what Life Touch is and how did it get started or you started or however it got started.
Well, it's a small LLC that was started by EJ Okeke, who is a psychiatrist who does medication, and she started her own practice that just continued to grow and grow. And I had worked with her previously at Gen Psych, and she wanted to expand, and she reached out to see if I wanted to start doing therapy because she wanted a more rounded practice, you know, doing okay. Medication. A lot of people need therapy in conjunction with taking medication to get the best results. So it's pretty small. There's two doctors and two therapists there now, but it's definitely growing really rapidly.
Which is a good thing.
It's a good
and you
thing.
Were at Gen Psych?
I was at Gen Psych for 6 years. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's where we cross paths.
Possibly.
Because, you know, I know people from Gen Psych, and, you know, they've been on the radio also with me, so.
True.
So it's possible. I mean, I'm not saying it is.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But, you know, it's very possible. Mm-hmm. That's where we ran across each other. How did you get into this type of work? You know, I like to ask that question because sometimes people say, oh, something happened when I was six and I always wanted to be, mm-hmm. you know, a social mm-hmm. worker or whatever. Or then there's my kind. Ooh, I'm married, 4 kids, mortgage, car payments, insurance, and I'm out of a job. So I better find something and I don't care what it is, you
right.
know. Actually, I happened to find, I found one and it was very fortunate because it was very good and mm-hmm. I liked it and so on and so forth. But actually, it was with Wonder Bread and Hostess Cake.
Mm-hmm.
But So anyway, I just like to ask people how they got into this type of work that they do.
Sure. Well, I was a little bit of a late bloomer, so I didn't go back to school till my late 20s. And really the reason I went back is my father was a Vietnam vet who suffered from PTSD. And growing up, he was in and out of treatment for many issues related to PTSD. And I just didn't feel like he got the proper treatment. He kind of always came out just as worse as he was, or they were really touching on some of the other issues, not the core issues of being traumatized. So I just felt that the system was not as effective as I would have liked it to be. So that's why I really wanted to get into the field, and I have a very strong passion for people with PTSD and military, and of course any kind of mental health issues. But I really got into it just to make sure that when people are asking for help, that they're getting the help that they need, not just kind of being milled through programs and not really getting their needs addressed.
Right, right. And, you know, lately being the last couple of years, there's been so much more available outside of the VA. You know, sometimes the VA does very good, and sometimes people fall through the cracks at the VA. You know what I'm saying?
Sometimes people fall through the cracks everywhere.
Everywhere, really but I'm saying, like, you know, and there's, I know somebody who does things with horses, where the vets go and,
and talk to the horses.
You know,
it's fantastic.
Spring Rains of Life, I think she calls
it.
And, you know, and they can talk to them. They don't ride them. They don't ride the horses. They just walk them around and talk to them and so on. And, it, you know. It's kind of cool.
Yeah,
I feel,
they're really expanding and getting really great.
Right.
And the VA is getting better with recognizing that they're not meeting the needs, and they're now outsourcing and giving different grants and doing stuff to ensure that the veterans are getting the help that they need.
Do you treat both men and women?
Yes.
Okay. Is there an age category that you deal with, or is it?
I usually only work with adults. So. Usually 18 to 20 and up.
Okay.
But I'm more comfortable with adult population.
Okay. But you do treat youth also?
I personally
do. No, I'm not you personally, but the organization that you're a part of?
The therapists and the doctors will treat.
Okay. All right. I was just curious.
So do you have many people from the Vietnam era?
I used to when I worked at GenPsych, because we actually did have a grant through the VA to provide therapy for them. Once I transitioned from GenPsych, I haven't had as many veterans because they're looking for the services that are paid through the VA, which they deserve that. You know, right now I'm only taking insurances. So I have a couple that have a history of being in the military, but I don't have as many veterans as I used to in the past.
Right. Okay. I'm very familiar with PTSD, being a vet and a non-vet. But it's ironic because not all vets with PTSD have actually seen combat.
That's true.
About 60% of the vets with PTSD never saw combat. And so, you know, how do you, I know you've dealt with a lot of people, and everybody has a different story. And some of the vets got theirs, got their PTSD because they were in the service, and now they're discharged. And they have a wife and kid and whatever, and, oh, I got to find a job, and it's like all of a sudden it comes crashing down on them. And that's just one example, but I'm sure you have others, you know, if you wouldn't mind.
Of veterans who haven't seen combat who have PTSD?
Yeah.
Well,
because it's pretty obvious if they've seen combat.
Well, and even if they've seen combat, that doesn't necessarily mean
No.
They're just more likely.
I'm just wacky. I'm not.
Well, unfortunately, there's a lot of sexual assault in the military, too. So there's a huge population that has PTSD from just experiences from being in the military and being assaulted. And, you know, there's so many things that the military and veterans do that they are exposed to, whether it's things they've seen, things they've experienced,
right.
Lost friends, that sure. really have an impact on them. There's so many things that can be traumatizing to us,
right.
or even being traumatized by, I worked with a lot of people that were still active duty who suffered from mental health, and kind of the way that they were pushed out of the military, you know, could create
right.
some
right.
some trauma, sure. feeling pretty rejected or,
right.
or shunned or kind of cast out. And again, then a lot of the times they're left just cut off, like once
right.
they get medically separated, and then they are left with families and children
sure.
and no source of income. And so all those things can just be really devastating for people to, I mean, I would call those more readjustment issues
right.
too,
right.
Because life outside the military is just a different world, especially if
totally
you're
different world.
In it for
right.
a long time.
And you know, it's ironic because, you know, we're talking about vets, but a lot of quote unquote civilians
mm-hmm.
have PTSD.
Absolutely.
Sandy, Katrina, tornadoes, mm-hmm. you know, like just now what's going on in the Midwest now.
Right.
Where they're just, towns are being destroyed and houses mm-hmm. are just, you know. So that all can cause post-traumatic stress disorder, which
absolutely.
Is what PTSD stands for.
Right.
Just so we get that out.
Right, because there's a misconception that people only get PTSD if you're in the military.
Right, and that's not true.
I tell them any
police
human
officers,
being is,
firemen, first responders,
absolutely.
EMTs, you know.
And just regular old people.
And just regular
car
people.
Accidents,
right, exactly.
You know, losing homes, losing people in very traumatic ways.
Right.
There's so many things that can traumatize
sure.
us.
Sure. And like I said, this lately, the last 6 months, 8 months, with all the storms and
yeah.
tornadoes and hurricanes and what have you, tearing up the country.
Yeah, and losing everything.
Right,
sometimes.
And the people lose everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, sad. You know, it really
it
is.
It really is, yeah.
I think we have to take a break.
Okay.
And we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. We're talking with Laura Brooks, who is a clinical social worker and has her master's and works at Life Touch in Princeton. And we've been discussing PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And we mentioned that, you know, it not only affects vets and even vets who haven't been in combat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it also affects, like I said, police officers, first responders, firemen, and the average person.
Absolutely. Yeah.
If they lose their house through a you know, tornado or demolish their brand new car or their marriage breaks up or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, that can have a lot to do with it, you know.
Sure.
And like I said, you know, how do you treat it? Because not all clients react the same to mm-hmm. the same treatment, you know, so it's not a one measures fits all type thing.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. It's definitely not cut and dry. And I've seen people with varying degrees of PTSD. Some are more mild and some are more severe. So usually when I start treating a client, I'd like to take a lot of time. I want to just do some education with them so they understand what's going on, what PTSD really is, and normalizing the experience they're having, because a lot of people just feel like they're going crazy and they don't right. really know what's going on. They can't do things they used to do. And then try to get a good idea of what their trauma history looks like and how it's currently affecting them. So some people, if they've been traumatized and it's more emotional trauma and they're dealing more just with internal issues, anxiety, depression, negative beliefs, guilt, shame, things like that, you could use cognitive behavioral therapy, really just to do some talk therapy with them to work through and help them understand how that trauma has affected them and why they're struggling in certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
If we look towards the end, that's a little bit more severe, where people are having all the PTSD symptoms. They're having the flashbacks, nightmares, high anxiety, hypervigilance, can't really go out, can't really do much. They really kind of, I tell them the PTSD is in the driver's seat. It's dictating their life, where they right. go, who they see. Those people, I would use what I'm most comfortable with, which is prolonged exposure therapy, which is a very intensive therapy that the people essentially have to relive their traumas in order for your brain to process them. So it's longer and a lot more intense than regular therapy. But what it does is when somebody has severe PTSD, everything is very fragmented. Their memories, situations, they're kind of always never really in the present. Right, they're usually right. in memories. They're worried about the future. A lot of fear-based things develop. So their brain is kind of processing in fragments. And what that does is it doesn't really allow the memories to transition to your long-term brain.
Mm-hmm.
So your brain can't really distinguish what's a memory and what's
right.
currently happening.
Right.
So every time they have a flashback, they have an intrusive thought memory, they're essentially reliving that. Like, the brain says, I'm here, this is happening, and they have all the same responses. So what you have to do is kind of force the brain through flooding techniques as they relive that memory, the more that you're kind of pushing the brain to process the memory. And as the brain starts to understand that it's a memory, it's not actually happening, all the symptoms start to come down, and the person really starts to get a hold of their life again. And everything kind of just starts to slow down. Everything starts to get back to normal. They're doing things they weren't able to do, like going out to restaurants or being in crowds.
Right, being in public and whatever.
Being
right.
in public, being around people, sleeping better, having a lot less anxiety. So that's usually my go-to for people that are really struggling with post-traumatic stress disorder.
I know that I've told a story on the air, you know, once or twice before, but a fellow I was stationed with reached out to me
mm-hmm.
and said, gee, he was in, you know, Philadelphia, and could we get together? Mm-hmm. And he'd like to go to New York because he'd never been to New York. He's from Utah, and I think it was Utah or North Dakota, one of them. And I said, sure, fine. So we get together, and we're in New York City, and we're going down 8th Avenue. And I don't know whether a bus backfired or a car backfired. And
yeah.
We're crossing the street, and I'm talking, you know, and all of a sudden he's not there. And I look behind me, he's curled up on the ground like
yeah.
this. And so, you know, I got him back,
mm-hmm.
and I took him up to VA in Lyons. And they really did help him.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know we haven't been, you know, in contact constantly, mm-hmm. but the last time he was doing very well. And, you know, but it's just, I was in shock. I was like, And we were together the whole time we were over there, so we were friends, you know, and it's like, you know, but it's just shaky, you know?
Yeah, and just fireworks, backfires, anything that's unexpected could really trigger it. And one of the other big misconceptions about PTSD that I think people make is the time frame from the trauma and then where they're at now. There's this notion that they think the more that time goes on, the less traumatized that they should be. So I'll have people come in, literally I've had Vietnam vets, I mean almost 40 years since they've been in combat that are still struggling. And that's what I hear a lot. It's been 5, 10, 15, 40 years. Like, this still shouldn't bother me anymore. Right. And I go back to what I was just explaining. Like, your brain doesn't differentiate time.
Right.
And a lot of, like, the Vietnam era vets, I told them you've learned to assimilate because you came home and I give credit to the Vietnam vets. You guys really started the movement of acknowledging the mental health issues from all of the struggles that you guys went through. But when you first came back, there was no help. There was a lot of rejection and shame. So a lot
people
of these...
spit at us.
Exactly.
At the airport.
Right. You were almost punished for being in the war.
Well, baby killers and...
Absolutely. And... you know, so they had to find their own way.
Right.
You had to survive. You had to make a living. And you had to accept that there was no help.
Right.
So a lot of people have come a really long way, but still the roots of the trauma still haunt them.
Right. Right.
You know, especially like, unfortunately, if they did kill children in combat, or they saw their buddy die in combat, or they had to do a lot of things that are morally against them as a person, but they had to do these acts of war.
And, you know, a lot of times you did things on instinct.
Survival.
You know, your buddy got hurt, so you're holding his stomach in, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Or, you know, his insides in, you know, until the medics got there. Or, you know, you did these things
or
and you didn't think about it until after. You know?
Right, and that's the training. That's what they train you to do. They don't want you to think.
Right.
Because if you think that
you react.
You could die if you think.
Right.
So a lot of it is reactive in certain situations. So people do things that they need to do to survive. Like, unfortunately, even in Afghanistan, they use little kids to transport bombs and stuff.
Right.
And people are put in really difficult situations, whether... Do we handle that, or just my whole, you know, my whole unit go down? You know, and it's making difficult choices that you knew were right in the moment, but then when you're living with it and having to process it, it's extremely painful and difficult to be okay with things that have happened.
Right.
So I want to take a quick second to ask about the mechanics of a session. Are they 45 minutes? How long are they usually?
A typical session is 45 minutes.
45 minutes.
If I'm doing exposure therapy, that's actually closer to a two-hour session.
Right.
Because there's a lot that goes into that. You know, usually there's a chunk of time in the beginning where you're just getting an assessment of what their life has looked like since the last session. Then you go into the actual exposure therapy part.
That's what I was concerned about. You sort of be in the middle of it, and all of a sudden the time's over. So
that makes sense. Yeah. And then once I tell people, once you activate the memory, then you could start emotionally processing it. Like, you almost have to put your brain back into the situation that you were in when the trauma happened. So a lot of the times people will look back. Like, say if it has been 40 years, people look back from where they're at now and try to kind of judge what they've done. And I said, in order to process it or come to terms with it, you have to remember that person you were at that time that it happened. So that's what happens when we reactivate the memory. They can understand more why they made certain decisions or how certain things developed out of that. So that's really my favorite part of it, is you really kind of get to the meat of how it's affected a person. And then, of course, you have to take a lot of time to ground them, contain them, and make sure they're in a good place, because you can't just send them out the door like that. So that is usually, that's why I said it's a pretty big commitment when when I do that. And it does take about usually 2 hours once a week.
Laura, you deal with anxiety and depression. Mm-hmm. And I know from years with NAMI, many times the two are interacted.
Correct. Yeah, as I always said, they feed off of each other.
Right. But let's start with anxiety. Would you describe some of the different types of anxiety that you see and treat, and how are they treated? Are they treated the same or whatever, you know?
Mostly you see a lot of generalized anxiety, where people just have kind of an underlining baseline of anxiety most days, most of the time. They may have anxiety or panic attacks, or really kind of just struggle with life in general. Or you can get more social anxiety, separation anxiety, anything that's very fear-based or future-based. And that I tend to treat a lot with cognitive behavioral therapy. That's kind of my go-to, because in cognitive behavioral therapy, you're getting to the roots and beliefs of a person. And I kind of equate them to like the roots of a tree. Like whatever your belief system is or whatever your fears are dictating your perception of the world. So, you know, it is kind of taking a history of maybe where some of the anxiety came from, whether it's abusive situations, maybe they've been abandoned. There's so many things that can create that feeling unsafe. And, you know, so if you could start to help an individual identify where the anxiety is rooted from and then try to get to the roots of it, that usually is the best treatment.
Okay.
But I usually start out with a lot of education. I'm big on education. How do they manage? How do they start taking small steps to get their life back? And then kind of getting a little bit more in-depth with where the anxiety is stemming from.
Right, right.
So that's pretty much across the board how I would treat anxiety.
Okay.
So why don't we just move into...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, why don't we just move into depression, the other side of the coin?
Yeah. Depression is actually kind of the same thing.
Okay.
It's... like in terms of treating it the same way, depression is a little more challenging for people, because I tell people when you have anxiety, you have this huge amount of nervous energy that I can teach you how to ground yourself, how to breathe, and how to do all these things to manage. But when you're depressed, it's the opposite. There's this lack of motivation, very flat, not engaged, trouble getting out of bed. So that's definitely more challenging, I think, for people to live with and to treat. And, again, just kind of pulling it back to where the roots came from. A lot of the times it's low self-esteem, low self-worth, having been abused or coming from a history of abuse, maybe where they felt like they weren't good enough or treated like they weren't good enough or didn't really have their needs met growing up.
Right.
So they just have these fundamental beliefs that life is just never going to work out for them. You know, so it's kind of getting them to understand, and then a lot of instilling hope for the future and hope that they can get better, that things can change, especially if people have been living with it for a really long time and been in and out of treatment a lot.
Right.
They start to lose hope in the process. So sometimes it's really just trying to get them to reinvest and try again, because they just need to fight through the hopelessness, which is really kind of what weighs them down the most.
Right. I know when I give presentations, and I know depression is a major health issue through NAMI and everything, but when I give presentations, I always say everyone gets depressed. I don't care who you are.
Right.
Everybody here in this audience, you know, whoever, you all get depressed. Bail the class. Broke up with your girlfriend, cracked up your car, you know. These are all things that cause depression.
Right.
And everybody gets depressed.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between a mental health issue And a quote-unquote normal depression is the length of time the person suffers with it.
Right.
And is depressed. And I know that I think, personally, and I'm not an expert like you, I think it'd be hard to treat depression.
It can be challenging. Usually with depression, you have to rely, even with anxiety, depending on how challenging it is, you do have to rely on medication.
Right.
Sometimes it's the medication that is enough to pull them out of kind of that depressive pit that they're in order for therapy to work. You know, if we're not, excuse me, if, you know, because sometimes therapy alone is not enough to kind of get them functioning again.
Right.
So there's always an assessment, like, would they benefit from medication in addition to treatment? And that's a conversation that I have with people. And I agree with you. I say all of our emotions are valid and normal. We all get depressed. We all get anxious. It's really how much it's controlling your life that it becomes a problem. You know, and is it situational or is it more chronic?
Do you find that, I won't say a lot of people, but a percentage of people that you treat for depression don't want to take medication?
Not necessarily. People, what I've learned is people wait a long time to get treatment. So sometimes they're pretty desperate when they come in. You know, if they've never really been treated and they come in and they're really struggling, they're kind of open to anything. And they're putting their trust and faith in me and other mental health professionals to know what they need and to give them direction and guidance.
Well, I know over the 20-some-odd years I've been with NAMI, I know I've seen people get on medication mm-hmm. who have depression. And not only depression, but any type of mental health issue.
Right.
They get on medication, and, oh, gee, then they stop because they feel so good.
Right.
And you stop and think and say, really? The reason you feel good is because you're on the medication and you're doing what, you know, your professionals told you to do. But you see it and I hear about it so often with families, you know, telling them about their loved one who, you know, all of a sudden stopped depression and then crashed again, you know, and have done so 3-4 times.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like.
Or they'll come in and they'll be kind of in that help me crisis mode. And you work with them, you get them on medication, they start to feel better. And then they stop coming to therapy, too. And it's like, but the medication is only one part. Like, the medication is treating the symptoms, but not, again, the roots of it. So that's what I always encourage people, that just because you feel better doesn't mean there's still not work to do in therapy. Because they come in and they're like, well, I don't really have anything to talk about today. And I was like, well, just give me 5 minutes and we'll start digging and we'll find something. And I always tell people, don't feel like you have to come to therapy prepared. You just have to show up and then I'll do my job. But it's kind of knowing how the two go together, and that it does take a commitment on people that struggle with mental health, that they do have to maintain it. Just like if you had diabetes or any other health issues, you have to do the work to keep yourself healthy.
Right.
Now, I have a question. Supposing someone cannot find what the root is. Maybe they're, for whatever reason, they're just never going to get to that. Can you still help them?
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, because some people don't want to get to the roots. They just want more surface stuff, or they just want more support, or they just want understanding. I think anybody can be treated. Mm-hmm. Again, it's just more their willingness to be an active participant in therapy. You know, it's not me. I always joke and say I don't have like a magic wand that I'm going to wave over you and make you better. Like, you come in and I work with you to get better, to whatever that person's needs are. We're all in different times and different places in our life when we seek treatment. So I spend time with a client too, just figuring out what are your needs? What are you looking for? And then I go from there. I don't really tell them what they need to do. I can educate them, but I always let them take the lead. I always tell them I'm in the passenger seat. You're in the driver's seat. So you kind of guide me at what you need through this experience to make you feel better.
Now, okay. Now some of your clients have both anxiety and depression.
And PTSD.
And PTSD. And I would imagine that that must be much harder to treat. I mean, if they have the three issues, or two of the three, or all three,
right.
I would think, as a non-professional, that it would be very hard to treat. You know, do you isolate one, and then another, and then another? You know, like, do you treat the depression, and then after you've handled the depression, treat the anxiety? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I'm asking you, you know? Or it depends on a person.
Yeah. Like I said earlier, they kind of feed off of each other. I always tell people, if you have a lot of anxiety, you're running on that nervous energy, say you're not sleeping, you're not doing all these things, it eventually fries your nerves, and your body can no longer take it. And then you crash. And then when you crash, that's when the depressive symptoms come in, and they kind of attack you. So that's when they're feeding off of each other. But usually a lot of them are coming from the same root causes. It's just the way it happens to be manifesting for that person. You know, anxiety is very future-based, all the what-ifs and the fears. Depression is really reflective on the past and the guilt mm-hmm. and shame. So a lot of it is usually from a lot of the same life experiences. They're just struggling with how to kind of balance mm-hmm. and manage
right,
that.
Right. I know I had a woman call one time, and not too awful long ago, and she said that her daughter wouldn't get out of bed and wouldn't get him out of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, I pound on the door and blah, 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 blah. I says, well, what would you like her to do if she came out of the room? She says, oh, take a shower and get clean. Okay. And then what?
Right.
Come down and have breakfast. Okay. So suppose she did that. Then what would you? Oh, have her go out and walk the dog. Oh, okay.
Right.
So I says, why don't you just back off and don't do anything? Just don't bang on her door. Leave her alone.
Right.
I'm not sure if it was 3-4 days later she called me. She, my daughter got up. She came out of the room.
Mm-hmm.
I said, what'd she do when she went out? She showered and, you know, got cleaned up, and she came down for breakfast. I said, oh, where is she now? She's out walking the dog.
Mm-hmm.
I says, well, you know, ma'am, it's not that your daughter probably didn't want to get up.
Mm-hmm.
It was just that there was something she couldn't get up at that
right.
point.
Right.
And it just kept her in bed
mm-hmm.
because that was the safest place at that time for her.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know what it was. I'm not a professional.
Yeah.
But she got up, and she's out walking the dog, and she got dressed, and she got cleaned up, and she ate breakfast with you,
yeah.
and, you know. So, you
and
know.
What people don't understand, if they've never struggled with anxiety and depression, is all those things that you just mentioned to someone who's severely depressed are, like, humongous tasks.
Right.
Like, sometimes I work with people just to take a shower and brush their teeth.
Right.
Like, that becomes really difficult for them. And then they may have a parent or a spouse that feels like they're, you know, they're making it bigger than it is, or they're just being lazy. And that actually feeds into their depression
sure.
and their feelings of worthlessness, which makes them more depressed. So I always encourage a lot of bringing families in to educate them as well to know that
right.
This is not something that people choose. I always tell my clients, like, if you had a choice, you would not choose to feel this way. You would
yeah.
be choosing to feel good and well. And that's what people that love them need to understand, too.
Right.
This is out of their control.
Right. My son is schizophrenic. He didn't ask for it.
No.
You know? He didn't raise his hand and say, oh, give it to me, you know.
Right.
It's a chemical imbalance of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it is. And he, unfortunately, got stuck with it. So,
yeah.
you know, he's doing very well right
well,
now,
that's
thank
great.
God. But,
great.
You know. But anyway, we have to take a quick break.
Sure.
And we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provide sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and my co-host is Tracy Ivey, and we're very, very happy today to have with us Laura Brooks, who's a licensed clinical social worker, has her master's, and works at Life Touch in Princeton. And we've been talking about how she and the people that work there treat the various types of depression and anxiety and PTSD and and we were talking earlier about PTSD, and it's, you know, not only veterans who have it. And, you know, it's tough because, like I said earlier, not all patients or clients react to treatment the same way.
Right.
Some you have to work real hard to get through to them.
Yeah.
And others it's like boom, boom, and it's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you're treating someone that has both anxiety and depression,
right,
is that treatment a little different than if you were treating one or the other? In other words, if you were treating just depression or just anxiety?
Not necessarily. Again, it really is going back to using cognitive behavioral techniques to kind of get through some of those things. I always start with the same goal when I first start working with a client is really, this kind of goes across the board. I think for anybody that comes into my office, my main goal is always establishing a sense of safety and giving the client enough time to build a trust and rapport with me. And then I find once they kind of, they trust you, they feel safe, and they have some faith in you that you can help them, that really kind of opens the floodgates to them.
Okay.
And it's being patient with the client to going at the speed that they need to go and taking the steps that you need to take to get them to be ready to be in a place to treat that. And then really once they kind of get attached, they're a lot more willing for me to kind of start probing a little bit more into the deeper stuff because we've taken that time to build that foundation. And I really think that's really where my highest success rate comes from is allowing them to have that safety, especially if we're talking about PTSD.
Right. Do you find that if a client has family who are very supportive, do you find that helps a lot?
I do. Yeah, having support is a huge thing. People that come in that don't really have support, you could see their symptoms are a lot more severe. Whether they just don't have supportive families, they don't really have friends, it makes their life a lot more harder and isolated. So if they have people that care about them and are supporting their treatment, I always encourage them to rely on that support. Again, I will pull in family members to educate them or give them tips and tricks. Mm-hmm. And they're like, how do I deal with mm-hmm. this? How do I deal with that? Because you want that support because right. they're only with me an hour a week. You right. know, they're living their life the whole rest of the time with their family members, right. with their friends. So right. those are the ones that you really want understanding and supporting them.
How long is the typical length of time of a client's treatment?
Yeah.
Treatments, if it's an hour or 45 minutes, how long, is it 6 months, 3 months?
Yeah. Again, I think it varies on what the client is struggling with and what they're looking for. I've worked with people as little as 2 or 3 months that maybe are just having some life adjustment issues, going to college or somebody passed right. away and things like that. But if they're more chronic issues that they've been dealing with for a long time, I've worked with people up to 3 or 4 years, okay. and like, again, it's once you form this attachment, and sometimes a therapist is somebody's only support system.
Right.
And when it becomes their primary support system, I tend to work with them longer. Even if we're not doing intensive mm-hmm. therapy, they need that consistency, that support, that knowing that somebody kind of has their back. So they tend to stay in treatment a little bit longer.
Right.
I think the term cognitive behavioral therapy is just thrown around a lot. Mm-hmm. And can you give a little explanation for how that might affect someone if they're working with you? What that means
to for them understanding what
well
that means,
if you say I treat them with cognitive behavioral therapy, how does that yeah. what is that
what does
exactly
that look like I try to explain it. I try to not throw a lot of terms around that the average person doesn't really know, so I explain a lot. I let them ask a lot of questions, but basically we have, our belief system, our core beliefs, whether I'm a good person, I'm not a good person, I'm worthy, I'm unworthy, and all of your reactions to the world are kind of being bounced off of these belief systems. So we want to identify some of the core beliefs, which take a while sometimes in therapy. So I kind of say we use the back-end method. We usually start with what are people's biggest triggers? Like, what kind of sets you off? What happens? What do people do? What kind of reactions do you have? And start connecting, okay, why, what is that trigger? What is it sparking in you that you're having a reaction? Once you have that reaction, you have some thoughts that accompany that reaction. What are the thoughts that accompany that? And what is it reinforcing in the mm-hmm. person? So somebody that is very depressed and has a low self-esteem, almost everything that happens to them, they're going to interpret as, well, I didn't do good enough, or it keeps reinforcing this negativity. So it's getting people really, really familiar with their thought process. And what I tell them is like your self-talk, this internal dialogue that we have with ourselves all the time. Are you supporting yourself? Are you saying I did the best I can, or are you saying I'm such a loser, I'm so stupid, I can't believe I did that again? Like, look at where is that individual reinforcing some of this negativity for themselves, and then kind of backing it. Okay, well, that's because you believe that you're worthless or you don't deserve more. So that's why you talk to yourself like that, and that's why you interpret all these life experiences. Mm-hmm. So I try to make it really practical for them and how to learn how to start interpreting the world and themselves right. a little bit differently. Right.
We have about 2 minutes left, so if you sure. would like to give out how somebody could get more information
sure.
or get in contact with you, or how,
mm-hmm. the best
do.
The best way to get in contact with me is my Psychology Today profile. So they could just go to psychologytoday.com. There's a little search bar. You could just put in Laura Brooks, LCSW, and Princeton. And usually I will pop right up.
Okay.
They can email me or they can use the number there, which is my business cell, so they can call me or text me there. And then just put out there the insurances I take. I take Cigna, Aetna, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and Medicare.
Okay.
So I don't take, I take a good amount, but I don't take everything. So that's usually a big thing for people too.
Right.
Like, do you take my insurance?
Right. Right.
So I have that all listed on the website, and it gives a little bio of my history, where I've worked, kind of, again, the treatments that I use. And then I'm free to answer questions, do phone consultations, or whatever it is to help people feel a little bit more comfortable.
Okay. And what was this now again? Psychology?
Psychology Today.
Today. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would go on that.
Yeah. And then it'll say, like there's a search bar, like looking for a therapist, or you could put in your zip code. What I find most direct is if they put in my full name and Princeton, and that'll just kind of pull them to me. Because if not, they'll pull up Laura Brooks's from all over United States. So just to narrow it down to make it a little bit easier for them.
Very good. Laura, I can't thank you enough for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was great.
I would love to have you back again down the road.
Sure.
And, you know, it's our privilege to have you, and all the work you're doing is so wonderful. You know.
Yes, thank you.
You know, people ask me why I do everything I do, and I just say, well, if I can help one person, makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah, so, for sure.
Except the difference is you're getting paid.
That's
true. Not, I'm only kidding. But it's true.
I
retired a long time ago. But anyway, we'll be back again next week, same time, same station. And just remember, folks, mental health really does matter. See you next week.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heidi and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Speaking at the White House on Monday, President Trump has a message for Iran.
If they want to make a deal, it's frankly, it's getting harder for me to want to make a deal with Iran because they behave very badly. They're saying bad things. And I'll tell you, it could go either way very easily. Very easily. And I'm okay either way it goes.
The president also says Iran is lying in its claim that they arrested 17 Americans who were part of a CIA spy ring. Now, one of the other things on the Trump administration's mind is Special Counsel Robert Mueller testifying before Congress on Wednesday. White House advisor to the president, Kellyanne Conway, tells Fox News she believes it's a huge waste of money.
They work for you. This is your money. You already paid for the Mueller report and the Mueller investigation. Now they want Bob Mueller. They want to drag him before Congress and have him read out loud.
This is USA Radio News.
It is a horrible scenario, but it happens. Dennis writes about his wife. She was diagnosed with leukemia. In fact, she's a two-time survivor. And in the midst of all that, they ran up over $1 million in medical bills. Thankfully, they're Medishare members. And Dennis says they are so thankful for that, how others came together to meet their needs. And that's how so many Medishare members feel. This is not health insurance. It's different. You don't have to pay for things you don't believe in. And like Dennis found out, it just works. So if you join Medishare, not only do you save a lot of money, the typical family saves about $500 a month, but you know where your money's going each month. You're helping people, and if the time should come, they'll be helping and even praying for you. So yes, it's different, and as more than 400,000 people now know, when it comes to healthcare costs, different is beautiful. Find out more. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
A ceremony being held to honor late Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens is being held at the Supreme Court. His successor, Elena Kagan, spoke at the ceremony.
He thought that no person, however high and mighty, was above the law, and he insisted that the law and the legal system treat every person, however weak or defenseless, with dignity and with fairness.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo taking part in high-level meetings down in Mexico. With more on the story, here's USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo meeting with his Mexican counterpart for trade talks in Mexico City, discussing trade and immigration, as in June, the Trump administration tied trade and immigration together with a threat of stiff import duties on Mexican goods beginning July 22nd if the neighbor to the south does not act to stem the flow of illegal immigrants to the U.S.-Mexican border.
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now, before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290.
Senate Minority Leader Democrat Chuck Schumer from New York is demanding that airlines stock planes with the life-saving EpiPens.
Why not EpiPens, which is one of the most life-saving things we have?
The call for EpiPens comes after a passenger on a Delta flight from JFK to Tel Aviv recently went into shock following a food allergy attack. A doctor on the flight was able to save the passenger's life by using a manual syringe, but Schumer says that's way too risky. Headliners of the 2019 Major League Baseball Hall of Fame include Mariano Rivera and Edgar Martinez. Rivera is the first unanimous Hall of Fame inductee after saving 652 games over his career. Rivera's speech went viral mainly because of how he began it.
I wanted to start this thanking my good Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, for giving me the talent and the blessing and open doors that I could never close and no man can close. To all my coaches, all my managers, all my teammates, man, you guys are special. I cannot do it without you guys. To the fans, you guys always push me to the best. Without your support, I cannot do it. I'm so humble and blessed to receive this incredible honor. God bless you all, and I love you. Thank you.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
And I've been told that the commute from the kitchen to the family room is real good. There's no traffic, so that's pretty good, actually. But what we try to do is we try to help people who either have someone in their family or know someone, work with someone, are friends with someone who have a mental health issue. We also try to help the person get the treatment that they need, put them in the right direction for their treatment. We do a lot of other things. We run family-to-family classes, which we just finished. This past Saturday was the last class, and it won't be, you know, they take off for the summer and they come back in the fall. But it's a 12-week program, and it covers medication, side effects, what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say in certain circumstances. And it also gets the person taking the class to feel what it's like to be the person with the illness. We run a support group the third Thursday of every month. This coming Thursday, it will be at 52 East Main Street. It's from 7 to 8:30. And you don't have to be a member of NAMI to take the classes or to, you know, come to the support group. You don't have to register for the support group. You do have to register for the class because they can only have a certain number there. If you have any questions, you can reach out to us at 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. And we don't man the phone 24/7, but we do have a lady who checks it at least twice a day.